Reining in soaring energy prices, European countries are facing an unprecedented gas shortage. Leaders have contingency plans, but are they enough to get through the winter? And will the EU put in place a long-term energy strategy? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. European energy ministers have failed to agree on a plan to cap Russian gas prices at an emergency meeting in Brussels. The session aimed to consider how to shield households and businesses from soaring energy bills. But the stalemate has cast doubt on whether the proposal will go ahead. EU Energy Commissioner Kadri Simson says countries heavily reliant on Russian supplies fear they will be cut off altogether. President Vladimir Putin had earlier threatened to make Europe freeze this winter if a cap is agreed. Russian supplies currently make up only 9% of EU gas imports, down from 40% before its invasion of Ukraine. European Council President Charles Michel has tried to reassure members. He says, "We need to remain calm. We must not let ourselves be intimidated by threats from the Kremlin." And he goes on to say, "We need to diversify our energy sources and supply sources because we see that Russia is not a reliable actor." In the UK, however, the Prime Minister announced a cap on energy prices to protect consumers. Liz Truss says the average annual household bill for gas and electricity will be limited to £2,500. That's around $2,900.
And I can tell the House today that we will not be giving in to the leader of the opposition who calls for this to be funded through a windfall tax. That would undermine the national interest by discouraging the very investment we need to secure homegrown energy supplies.
President Putin's threat increases the likelihood of energy rationing in Europe this winter. Analysts say August was already the most expensive month on record for energy tariffs on the continent. Prices in Germany were more than 35% higher last month compared with the same month a year before. France recorded a smaller increase, with costs rising a little over 22%. And in Italy, the prices jumped nearly 45%. In Netherlands, the energy bills were a record 151% higher in August this year than in August 2021. Let's bring in our guest. Sandrine Dixon-Declerve is an energy climate researcher and co-author of Earth for All, a survival guide for humanity. She joins us from Brussels. Clive Moffat is the founder of the UK Energy Security Group and a former UK government energy advisor. He joins us from London. And in Izmir, in Turkey, we have Mehmet Agucu, who is the chairman of the London Energy Club and a former director of British Gas. A warm welcome to you all. I want to begin in London with Clive Moffat. Clive, what the British government is doing is capping energy prices at $2,900. That's obviously going to be a great help for the British people, and it's something that maybe other governments will take on as well. But the cost of this long term is said to be about $100 billion. Is this feasible?
To be honest with you, no. In the last month, government borrowings increased by over 30%. I think this is a... quite frankly, is this level of a market intervention in the price is not justified. And I think it's there's other ways that could be achieved. There are problems with trying to, if you like, help households through the price mechanism, especially when you don't control wholesale prices. And I don't think price mechanism should be used as a tool of welfare policy.
Mehmet, in Izmir, the governments have to do something. And this is the something that seems to be the easiest option, given that Russia isn't playing ball. Is this a good option, do you think?
Well, I mean, whatever EU decides, because we are going to hear about it from the EU president on Wednesday, despite all the disagreements witnessed yesterday, I think whatever matters is, at the end of the day, is to very quickly respond to the crisis. And in this regard, I don't see that there is much hope. We are talking a lot about possible solutions, you know, from diversification of supply sources to tax on windfall profits, also reduction of consumption. But these are all medium to long-term measures. We need quick fixes if EU is not going to have a cold and very bad winter coming. And Russia has seems to have an upper hand right now. They are providing only 9% of the EU gas as opposed to 40% before the invasion of Iraq. And now if you also have a price cap on Russian gas, it will totally be wiped out. Nothing will be there. And EU is not prepared to substitute for this loss. So I think it is very important to see the big picture. And I don't think that EU leaders are seeing the big picture. Of course, medium term, you can build a new European energy supply architecture through renewables, through diversification, through energy savings and efficiency, hydrogen, you name it. Perhaps revival of nuclear industry and new pipelines coming. But I think the key challenge to keep European households and industry happy and not to lose the competitiveness in the world markets is to fix the quick term. And most important challenge, I should tell you, is the market liquidity. Because if $1.2 trillion is not injected into power generators and households, I think we are going to see a sort of a Lehman Brothers collapse in energy industry very soon. So I think they have to act very, very quickly rather than dealing with integrity of this problem.
Well, let's bring in Sandrine here. Sandrine's an energy climate researcher. Surely, our guest is saying we need a quick fix solution, but surely quick fix solutions are what has got us into this problem in the first place. We need a longer term solution on energy reliance from one large provider like Russia. That needs to change, surely.
I'd like to build on that, and you're absolutely right. I do agree that we need short-term levers, and those short-term levers, however, cannot actually make us backtrack on our long-term objectives. As was just said, it's going to be difficult in the next few months, and we have to think through what are the buffers that we're going to give, the price caps, ensuring actually that we also work with consumers through energy efficiency measures and that we reduce our demand. I think it's a good thing that we've shifted from 40% to 9% in terms of our dependency on Putin. I do think that we need to be very careful that we don't set up further unholy alliances and substitute our dependency on Russia with other dependencies outside of Europe. So we do need to address the dysfunctionality of our current relationships geopolitically with regard to energy, but also very much address the infrastructure at the European level and the market signals that we're seeing. Also, the decoupling of the market from gas prices. This has been one of the key issues that we have seen and we need to start to address. How do we actually invest in a European market that truly does foster much more capital for renewables, build that infrastructure as fast as possible, and in the meantime, ensure that we actually buffer consumers. We can enable tax incentives, as we're seeing. We're going to have to proceed with some type of energy check. The other conversation that I just recently had with the European Investment Bank and also with the European Central Bank is how can they help? How can we enable short-term loans that actually could probably address some of the city-level disruptions, transport poverty and energy poverty that consumers are going to see, whether it be in buildings or whether it be in the transport system? So we have a lot of tools in the toolbox. And my key counsel to the European Commission and actually President von der Leyen just this week has been, do not backtrack now. It is the dysfunctionality of the markets that we show very clearly in our book, Earth for All, or Survival Guide for Humanity, this dependency on too many short-term suppliers, which will get us in a future long-term mess. And so we need to think about how we properly invest and give the signals to investors to continue to move towards renewables and demand-side management efficiency measures.
Clive, I want your thoughts on this as well, but I want to go to Mehmet in Izmir first. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I also think that the glass is half full because this huge crisis might present an opportunity as well. We've all been working long to make the transition from fossil fuels to green energy and efficiency as quickly as possible. We have a decarbonization goal of 2050. Even this is quite optimistic. But perhaps this crisis, no matter how we are going to solve it in the next few months and 2-3 years, might be perhaps pushing us towards a quicker transformation because we have no other option. And the Commission and most of the European Union countries agree that they will stick to the Green Deal climate change goals, and they will move still to greener fuels, and they don't want to commit to gas, coal, or oil beyond the next 2 years, because this transition will take at least 2-3 years. And therefore, perhaps this might be presented as an opportunity to work together to quicken the pace of transformation. The other issue, I think the previous speaker said very well, money matters a great deal. Wherever you put the money, transformation will move in this direction. Over the past few years, we saw that almost 3/4 of the investment dollars are moving to renewables. But now, don't forget, we still consume 83% fossil fuels in our global energy mix. And you cannot move from fossil fuels to greener fuels very quickly. So there has to be a smooth transition. I think we hasten this process. That's the reason why some of the disruptions are taking place. And the other issue is whether, as I mentioned, this Lehman Brothers type of collapse of energy companies, how they can be avoided and how these companies could be transformed.
Well, let's let me bring in Clive Moffat Hicks. I want to hear his thoughts on this as well. The example of Lehman Brothers we just mentioned, sorry, if you just give me a second, I'll ask you the question. It might actually focus things slightly. We've heard the example of Lehman Brothers here. Now, Bulb in the UK has already failed, and that's been a very costly bailout for the government. Is there a way the market, Clive, can actually act positively here?
I think we're in danger here of confusing short and long-term issues. I'd just like to reiterate what the last speaker said about gas. You might hate or like whatever about the Russian gas, but the point is that gas per se is something that Europe and the UK continue to depend upon, both for heat and power. And that will be for some significant number of years, probably 10 to 15 years. The other issue I like to focus on is like trying to separate out short and long-term considerations. On the short term, Europe has two problems. One is to mitigate the impact of potential energy rationing on industry and consumers. And the other is to try and help those families, those households who are spending a disproportionate amount of their income on energy and could do with some help. You've got to bear in mind that to a large extent for most of households across Western Europe, that in fact, this is a problem for some people, but it's not a crisis for all. Intervening in markets to peg either wholesale prices or retail prices is grossly expensive. And it effectively underpins suppliers. It gives money to people who don't really need it. Suppliers get their financing hedging costs underpinned, and the consumer is left with possibly a higher price burden than it would necessarily do, and it's also potentially a tax problem in future years. You've got to bear in mind that the current supply costs break even for LNG and North Sea gas is less than half the current forward retail price for wholesale gas. Now, I'm an economist, and I've been around many commodity situations for a long time, and you can expect that there will be, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, some form of correction, despite the daily speculation in the market about whether Putin will turn off or on Nord Stream 1. So I think we have to look at that and say, well, if we go in and intervene in the markets in a very way that Liz Truss has, there's a danger we preclude the adjustment that might take place, certainly by the first quarter of next year, in terms of wholesale prices. So I can understand ministers in Europe reacting in the way that they have, and I think they are quite rightly concerned, because one of the biggest threats of trying to peg wholesale gas is that you run short of gas per se, and then you have to a huge it has a huge impact on industry and consumers. But see, in all of this debate, there's been a lot of too much emphasis on price and not enough on improving flexibility of gas supply and liquidity in both the gas and the electricity market. Coming back to the longer-term issue that one of the last speakers mentioned about investment in renewables.
Right.
Now, there is a way, what we need to have here is a far more coherent, what we don't have is a coherent approach, never have had, from Brussels or from London, a coherent approach as to what, in fact, is a viable alternatives. In many cases, a lot of the technologies that have been talked about simply aren't viable at this point in time.
But, Clive, everything you've just said points to, and there's one bit of what you just said which kind of struck out to me, is that not everybody will be affected by this. There are some people who won't actually pay that much more, but it's going to be the poorest people in Europe that will be affected, and that's a political problem. I want to bring Sandrine in here. There is a political aspect to all of this, right? Those poor people, they do need help.
Absolutely. And again, the research that we've been doing and the analysis that's come out of our system dynamic modeling, which is featured in Earth for All, and then the stress testing we've done with economists, and this is even prior to the Ukrainian crisis, has been very much that we're going to have social tipping points before we even have environmental tipping points. If you look at the compound effect between COVID, clearly, and then the climate impacts that we've seen across Europe, which have already wreaked havoc on the production and yields of agriculture. And then you bring in, obviously, the Ukrainian impacts, both on food and energy, plus inflation. All of this is hitting at the same time. That's why we cannot actually address this in a vacuum and only think about the gas market. We have to start thinking about the perversities within our economy, which includes subsidizing actually large-scale industrial production, subsidizing fossil energy, not ensuring that we have a proper price differential to enable the most vulnerable to be able to continue to heat their homes, in addition to the way in which we look at the electricity market. And we've already got those types. I mean, I agree that there needs to be absolutely more flexibility in the electricity market, but the fact that we have actually not decoupled the market between renewables and gas, and that clearly it is the gas price that continues to put a high price on other sources of energy, is totally dysfunctional. So we have to look at the full picture. And as I indicated before, we do have tools in the toolbox. We're going to have to go into crisis mode. We are in a crisis. We need a planet. We need an emergency plan, as anyone does when actually the house is burning. And Europe is going to, unfortunately, be hit very hard over the autumn and the winter. There is no doubt that there will be some suffering, and there already is, by our citizens.
Mehmet,
we need to make sure that we put in place
I want to bring in Mehmet here in Izmir. There's a crisis, Mehmet, says our guest, in Brussels. Something needs to be done. Is that something making nice with Vladimir Putin?
Well, I mean, Vladimir Putin is probably laughing at how Europeans are dealing with this crisis because he warned most of his things before. And I expect that there will be more cracks within the European Union because it's not a monolithic body, as we know. Each member country has its own interests and needs in energy. France depends 85% on nuclear, 10% on hydrogen. So it's more or less secure in many respects. Whereas Germany, which is the dynamo for European export, needs more energy and cheap energy in order to maintain competitiveness. Look at Bulgaria, Lithuania. Hungary just signed an agreement with Gazprom to bring 5.8 billion cubic meters of gas via Serbia. And Bulgaria is receiving Russian gas through Turkey. So I think there's going to be huge cracks, not only how to support the most vulnerable in the society, but within the European Union countries. I think this is going to serve the purpose of Vladimir Putin, as you say, as well, dealing with a weak and divided European Union. Even for LNG, you know, Spain has 6 LNG receiving terminals, and they can receive more gas and send it pipe by pipeline via France to Germany. France is rejecting this. And then through Italy, perhaps, you know, Algerian and Libyan gas coming under the Mediterranean could be also shipped to Germany. These are going to take a long time. whether we are going to expand also Tanap and TEP, bringing gas from Azerbaijan. What will happen to Iran? On the other hand, when I talked to officials in Germany recently, they told me that we don't need gas 2 years from now. If there is gas, we will buy it now. If we don't sign long-term contract, nobody is going to invest in it and send you gas. So this, that means that restructuring of
sorry,
the energy
market... We are running out of time, and so I do want to come to our other guests. I want to bring in our other guests. Clive, you were a former UK government advisor. How much of the advice that, you gave to the former government was political in nature, and how much of it was just simple economics? And is politics a consideration for you?
Yeah, one of my arguments has been that politics has got in the way of energy for far too long. And maybe the time has come, certainly in the UK. I did raise the issue when I advised on the third energy directive in Brussels in 2005, that the issue maybe would need to set up an independent energy advisor, energy group, if you like, not outside of government to take the long-term planning decisions that have been referred to about decarbonisation. I'd just like to mention the point that the market became, wholesale markets became broken in Europe once governments decided to patchwork on decarbonisation generation, low-carbon generation onto the merit order system, which effectively without taking full account of the intermittency and the costs associated with that. What it did was marginalise gas generation. So we're in a situation, one of the crises that ministers in Europe are having to deal with now and are dealing with, as is the Bank of England here, is to make sure there's adequate funding available so that gas power generators can actually hedge against the speculation, further speculation in the forward price. Otherwise, they could cease to produce, and that would simply exacerbate and turn the lights out. So no politician wants the lights going out when they're in charge, and certainly not the new prime minister. So we're in a situation where we have to, and I totally agree about the need to set in place guidelines, investment signals for long-term investment in low-carbon generation. But we are away from that. I argued strongly in 2005 in Brussels to actually not have a emissions trading scheme, but to have a single long-term trajectory for the price of carbon.
Let me bring in Sandrine here. Sandrine, we're talking about this idea that there needs to be a separate mechanism, a separate institution that deals with energy crisis like this. Is that a good idea, do you think?
I completely agree. And I would actually add, and this has been one of the proposals that I've been making for a while, that we need a food stability board. We had a financial stability board. We need to address energy stability. And I do think that we need to put in place some type of mechanism to enable that to happen. This comes back to ensuring that we have flexibility also in the market. I also very much agree with the comments on the spot market and the fact that we have to address PPAs, long-term contracts. This is incredibly important. It's also very important for industry, by the way, who also are suffering very clearly from this. And the way in which the metals industry and some of our high carbon industries are really going to have difficulty over the autumn and the winter has already been very clearly expressed. So we do need to enable the possibility for our industries to have some security in terms of long-term prices. We need to give that same sense of security to the investment community and in particular to start to put in place that transition plan towards renewables. A lot of that is pricing. I fully agree in terms of a carbon price. We should have a much higher carbon price. We also need to start addressing again the elephant in the room and go back to looking at carbon taxation rather than just thinking that the emissions trading scheme is going to help us and truly create the transition that we need.
I want to thank all our guests, Sandrine Dixon de Clerve, Clive Moffat and Mehmet Oguchu. And I want to thank you as well for watching. Now, you can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.